At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Grandling.
And I'm Connor Orr.
Connor, we have a Super Bowl. It's the Super Bowl of Super Bowls, as far as I'm concerned. We're going to give a quick preview of that one. But we have some Sunday games to run through, some conference championships. And as we've done in the past, we are going in reverse chronological order, starting with the second game and then working our way back to the first. Much easier to order this show than past ones. But let's start in Kansas City, where you were not on Sunday.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, you're at a game, but in case you forgot, you were not at this game, where the Chiefs, with a slightly hobbled Patrick Mahomes, finally get the better of the Bengals here.
Yeah. It's hard to say that this game wasn't at least somewhat marred by the officiating, but I don't want that to take away from what was a really incredible performance and a really gutsy performance from Mahomes. I think that, you know, we all talk about, well, these guys need to be able to play through injuries because that's part of their job. But if anyone has ever tried to run on a high ankle sprain, it really hurts. And if anyone has ever tried to run really fast or laterally on a high ankle sprain, it's even worse. And so, imagine, you and I, Gary, are of a certain age. You're a little bit different in that you're an ageless basketball player. your style of basketball transcends what is on your birth certificate.
Yeah. I think that's true. Yes.
You are a sharp shooter. Always have been. Dangerous from anywhere on the court. Whenever I go to play basketball, it's sort of a physiological event, and my body gets very nervous for that. I'm very used to linear running, and if we have to go side to side, there's a lot of preparation that needs to take place there. And inevitably, 5 seconds in any pickup basketball game, right, I'm going to sprain my ankle. And then you can't just leave because, you know, you gave your friend a ride there or whatever, and so you just figure you're going to gut through it. And that's a very minor example, but that really hurts. And so what Patrick Mahomes is dealing with is like 50 times that. And we all thought they would have to go quick game, and yet some of his best touchdowns were classic Mahomesian extend the play, fake, step up in the pocket, and then just shoot one over the middle. And it was incredible.
Yeah, first of all, I like the idea of your body. It just is like a self-defense mechanism, just spraining your ankle when you're standing still on the basketball court. But back to the actual football game here. It's a great ball. What I think you were missing in this game was the ability to basically extend the play and then launch the, you know, whatever, 60-yard cross field pass that you would normally see from Mahomes, which wasn't a huge part of their offense this year anyway, but he was certainly moving around enough, more than enough, to make this thing work. He probably missed like two or three throws that he would probably normally hit, and it probably had something to do with the ankle and planting and throwing and that sort of thing, but it was a fairly Mahomesian afternoon. It kind of, you know, if you didn't know about the high ankle sprain, you probably would have watched that game and been like, huh, he seems a little bit little bit off. Seems like he tweaked something, but seems like no big deal, and he's going fine.
Do you want to know what very specifically with the Chiefs really raised my alarm and I thought was fascinating? Because we've seen this attempted by a couple of teams now, and nobody's perfected it, and nobody's good at it right now. But mm-hmm. It was like a 2nd and 11 throw to Travis Kelce in the first quarter, where yep. he throws it to Kelce, and then Kelce immediately turns. So you could tell it was designed. He immediately turns and pivots to Jerick McKinnon like he's going to rugby lateral the thing. There are folks out there who do believe that that's going to be kind of, you know, 10 years down the road, right? That's going to be commonplace in the NFL, and it's going to look weird now, but that's a thing that's going to happen. And I think it's very, very, like, wild. Because the Chiefs have all these good skill position players, and if they were able to take some of the pressure off of Kelce after the catch and allow him to get the ball to, like, Jerick McKinnon, or if Clyde Edwards-Helaire is healthy for the Super Bowl, or Isaiah Pacheco, you know, like, that'd be really cool. And you're essentially baking in an extra 5 yards after the catch every time.
So that's incredibly legitimately interesting that this is a possible long-term trend. Not long-term, but long-term thinking trend in the NFL. And it was... I think there's two ways you could read that play. Number one, to me, it was kind of like, huh, they're running the hook and lateral. Is this sort of early desperation here? Is this the old... I always think back to the old Patriots teams where whenever Tom Brady went into a game when, like, Gronkowski was out and Edelman was out, and it was, like, Danny Amendola and then, like, I don't know, just, like, six dudes they brought in from the parking lot playing receiver, they would run a lot of gadget stuff and a lot of weird stuff because it was like, I don't know, there's no other way we can actually... move the ball here. So there's a bit of that. It was a low risk play. I mean, the lateral was terrible and it was still really nowhere near a turnover. So
right.
I'm open to your just mad ravings at this point. you might be right here.
Well, you know who, I believe it was, Adam Kilgore is a writer for the Washington Post, is really, really good, and I think it was a couple years ago, he went down to Arkansas for Kevin Kelly, the high school coach who never punts.
Yep.
That was Kevin Kelly's thing. He's like, well, the next thing I'm going to do is this. Like, that, I'm going to figure this out. And we're going to play rugby style football. And I don't think it ever really came to fruition, but we have now seen legitimate attempts at making this work on several different teams at several different times this season. And I do think that there's a legitimate curiosity there, you know?
Man, that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah.
It'll really mess with people's fantasy scores though.
Yes.
So again, this was, to be clear, an impressive win by the Chiefs. I thought they were the better team in this game. It was a weird game. Protection held up for Mahomes really well. I think you could also maybe cite the fact that there were constant holds, usually multiple holds on every snap. But Mahomes was mostly clean and had time to operate in the backfield here. And that was obviously a huge deal when you're dealing with a guy who is hampered. And everything just kind of worked well enough for them. You'd think in 2 weeks he's probably going to be pretty close to 100%. Probably as close to 100% healthy as any quarterback would be this time of year.
Yeah. One more note, though, on the laterals. At the end of the first quarter, Kelce faked it again to Noah Gray. Did you notice that?
Yes.
I don't know. They're trying to set something up here. That's what I'm saying. You know, are you trying to put a little bread and butter here out there just for the Eagles to look at? I don't know.
Yeah.
So I noticed, and I would be interested to get the, I wasn't able to chart this one because I wasn't, I was working at the Eagles game And so I haven't had time to go back and chart this one, but I would be interested to see the total blitz numbers from the Bengals, because I do think they started sending guys. I saw a couple linebacker blitzes. Like, I wonder if they, you know, they're like 13% is usually their blitz rate. So one out of every like 10 or 12 snaps, I'd be curious to see how, if they did that any more frequently against the Chiefs on Sunday, you know, but I don't know. It's one of those situations where the formula has worked so well for so long with them, specifically against Kansas City, and what a time for Mahomes to sort of beat them at what they do best defensively.
Yeah, my unhelpful guess is they were, I think they were probably around that. I feel like they didn't send guys very often in the first half, and they sent them more, especially early in the second half, when it seemed like they had a little bit more of a bead on what the Chiefs were doing. But you had the feeling, and oh boy. So Kadarius Toney went out with an injury. Mecole Hardman came in with an injury and left with an injury. No Juju Smith-Schuster for most of this one here. The Bengals were looking at these Chiefs receivers and saying, okay, well, this is not going to be an issue matching up here. Obviously, they doubled Travis Kelce for most of the last three quarters of this game. But it just felt like they probably thought they could just, you know, win the battle in coverage, and they were probably correct to think that, but it ended up being just too much time for Mahomes to operate again because of good pass protection and because of a lot of possible holding.
The refs in this, can we talk about them for just a little bit? I mean,
yeah, we should. If this was a look, none of these are necessarily great weekends for officials. I don't know if you've ever come out of a playoff weekend and been like, man, what a well-officiated weekend. So I feel bad piling on, but it was a bad weekend. It was a bad Sunday for officiating, not only because of incorrect calls, but just the administration of the games were really, really bad.
So in back-to-back weeks, I was in Philadelphia, and last week a chain broke. Like, the actual first down chain broke. And then this week, the referee had to come onto the field and say, we are not sure whether the ball hit the wire on the punt. Like, we just don't know. And it's like, how is this happening? And, you know, what blows my mind is, you know that is secondary, but it just gives this sort of appearance of an officiating jalopy just plodding along here. And referees look more like clowns, I think, than they ever have before, incidentally. But you have this Chiefs game now where, you know, I'm not going to get Joe Rogan-y here, but I feel like if you are prone to believing that the NFL has a way to dictate games via officiating or influence gambling outcomes via officiating, you left Sunday night with a tinfoil hat on. And and this isn't, again, I don't think that this is the case, but, you know, you and I cover the NFL for a living, but in the real world, we are part of text message groups of avid fans who just happen to be our friends. And I can say that when I woke up this morning, the first 9 texts I got were all of my friends sharing gambling memes, or there was one with Patrick Mahomes posing with the official and then them swapping jerseys after the game. And so that is, when you openly embrace gambling the way that the league has, this is what you're inviting in. And I think that there is a deeper skepticism and disbelief of officiating than there ever has been at any point in NFL history.
And by the way, that meme features Bill Vinovich, who did not work either game this weekend. So
Bill Vinovich.
If you get your memes from Barstool Sports, just know they're historically inaccurate. in this case, yeah, I mean, the other one that came up, and it just looked absurd. I understand the sort of domino effect that led to the do-over play in the Chiefs game, which was, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm trying to think back. That might have been the most embarrassing officiating mistake I can remember.
Yes.
I mean, I was a little kid when the fifth down game happened, Colorado and somebody, I can't remember the opponent at this point, Baylor maybe. But yeah, that was brutal. And I get it. And it was on Ron Torbert. It was his fault. He told the clock operator to start the game clock and the play clock on his wind, which was incorrect. It was coming off an incomplete pass. I don't know why they were respotting the ball by a half yard before that. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't, there's just too much, there's definitely too much being put on their plate, but why are you respotting the ball a half a yard on a third and nine? If it's third and one and the half yard makes a difference, yeah, sure, go ahead. Let's be more exacting there, but it's third and nine. Just do, unless the ball has moved 3 yards, just run the play. If that's indeed what ended up being the reason for that whole delay that led to the entire debacle. And yes, you could see on the replay, the you know, one of the back judges is running in, waving his arms, trying to stop the play, and you do have to do it over at that point. As
yeah.
absurd as it looks, but that's just, it's just such a sloppy series of unforced mistakes by the officiating crew in the, you know, whatever, the game that's tied for the second biggest game of the year.
Yeah. This, speaking of the ball spot, I just had nowhere to say this, but it's relevant. So last week, during the Giants Eagles game, you know, I had the binoculars on and I was, you know, watching, it was during a TV timeout and the official spotted the ball and it was like a third and manageable. And I forget who it was, but a Giants defender just walked up to the ball and picked it up and moved it back half a yard. For, and then nobody did anything. Like, nobody saw it. Nobody saw it. Nobody corrected it. And I'm just sitting up there like, is anybody seeing this? Like, does anyone care? And nobody cared. But when officials come out and they say, because I remember doing a story on this when Al Riveron first got the job as the head of officiating.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, you know, Connor, it's tough to officiate, but we get 97% of our calls accurate. And if you go to the NFL's homepage, they say that we get 90%, 97% of their calls accurate. The problem is and they say this is according to their own audit, internal audit. Who is going to dispute that, right? Who is going to look at that and say you're wrong? I mean, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but I can say with absolute certainty that if there was like a 538, how popular is this person poll right now, it would, you know, they would be very low on the ground. They would be like, what do you think officiating? I don't know. My dad's an official, so he would give them a high approval rating because he knows how hard it is. But other than my dad, who's voting for these refs right now?
I know. Honestly, it would be single digits. And we'll get into the 49er-Eagles game, which there's not a ton to break down football-wise, so I'm sure we'll talk about the Devontae Smith non-catch-catch and that sort of stuff. And honestly, that crew got kind of hung out to dry to an extent by Park Avenue dropping the ball on that one. So there's just a lot of, that was the frustrating thing. The two things, I think if you're a Bengals fan, you can be legitimately frustrated by the lack of holding calls on the Chiefs offensive line when you also had that big sort of ticky-tack pass interference call on Eli Apple. Like, you can't have both of those things.
Right.
You can have a let them play type of game, or you can have a we're going to call everything type of game. You're probably going to get the, I mean, every NFL team knows to expect the let them play approach. This time of year, that's usually why Bill Vinovich is doing one of these games. That's what his crew is known for. But yeah, it was just the ridiculous administrative errors that threw this off. I guess as I think back, I guess the most embarrassing play was the missed pass interference call on Rams Saints a couple years ago. But this one was up there, having to do a do over on a key third down in the AFC title game in the fourth quarter. Is pretty bad.
Being at that Rams Saints game was one of the best moments of my life. Just complete and total chaos. Just absolute Bedlam. Oh, well, I still remember that. I still remember standing next to Nickell Robey Coleman, and it was like me and two other reporters, and he was like, "Well, let me see the play." And we showed him the play. And then he goes, "Oh yeah, I got him." It was amazing.
It's so good.
It was so good.
And I know you, like me, have just a heart of darkness, just a black heart. It's kind of so much more fun when it happens to the home team.
Yes.
And you just get all the infuriated people immediately reacting. And so you don't have to go to social media and see what people are saying. You're right there for the angriest people in the world being upset about that. And you get to kind of, you know, be a jerk about it and be like, yeah, I have no rooting interest here. This is just funny.
Yes.
Oh, man. A couple of random notes on this. Number one, I mentioned the Kadarius Toney injury. And by the way, the challenge at the beginning of this game was pretty absurd by Andy Reid, only because it looked like... So Kadarius Toney drops the touchdown. Tough catch. I don't want to overstate it, like he dropped it like it bounced off his chest. Tough catch, didn't survive the ground. It was really difficult to see because he was like on top of the ball and the side judge was blocked on it. It was a tough call for the officials. I think they based the call on the fact that Toney got up and like started walking off the field like Charlie Brown with like the sad music playing, and they were like, oh, okay, well, he must have dropped it. Incomplete. And the Chiefs challenged it a minute later, and I just don't know what would have happened, because I don't know if Toney like sort of very sullenly walked off the field and then he was like, I caught it. And it's like, I don't know, usually you're, you know, waving your arms and throwing a fit if you think you caught it. That was super weird. But Toney was out, and they miss him as a receiver, obviously. But Sky Moore ended up, you know, the rookie receiver ended up going back and returning punts again, which is something they got away from because he repeatedly proved unable to catch punts, which is an issue earlier this season. So he's taken off punt return duties. He was back on it, and he ended up basically having the we're going to get to the other key play here on that drive, but that was the biggest play that set up the game-winning field goal, was his 29-yard punt return there.
Yeah, yeah. And a great game by Sky Moore, by the way. Mm-hmm. I thought that was sort of a breakout performance and did earn him a major shout-out in my Super Bowl predictions, which are on SI.com today. You, by the way, edited a just beautiful 911 Lone Star joke into my copy, and I just wanted to tell you live on the podcast that was really well done, and it made me smile.
It was my lone contribution to those 3,000 words.
I think Sky is one of those players that, like, I mean, if Jerick McKinnon didn't break out the way that he did this year, I think you could have used him in the backfield a lot more, and I still think you might see that a little bit in the Super Bowl. I think that might be interesting. Challenge the Eagles horizontally a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously the play that set up the field goal was Joseph Asai, who played well in this game. And I don't say that as like sort of a pat on the back type of thing, but if you were sort of listing the Bengals' top five players in this game, he was one of them. And obviously he picks up the unnecessary roughness call. Good call. I mean, it wasn't even like a quarterback or not type of conversation. Mahomes, almost his second foot was down on the white stripe by the time the push came. And I get the instinct that is taking over in that case where you're, you know, you see the first down marker and you're trying to keep him from getting. But the thing, I mean, man, it's like they weren't in field goal range. There was, the Chiefs were maybe going to try and throw a quick pass to the sideline, get out of bounds, and then kick a 50-something yarder. But that would have been like a 60-yarder from where they were on the field at that point. And man, what a bummer.
Yeah, I have to say this too, and you know, nobody's really going to care, but it means a lot to me, and I think the fact that he talked after that game, I give him all the credit in the world. Like, to step up in today's climate and to just allow yourself to be, and again, I think a lot of the reporters, like, if anyone wants to read like a good column on it, I think our columnist Mike Rosenberg did a great job. He wrote about that. He was in Kansas City. I mean, I think a lot of us have more compassion and humanity than we're given credit for. But the players don't know that in that moment. You know, you've just done the worst thing. I mean, let's hope to God this is the worst thing that ever happens to him in his life, right? Yeah. And this is it. This is the worst moment. And you have to get up there and you got to talk to people about it and you got to be asked questions about it. And you know it's going to be clipped and played on every radio station and TV station and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I think it deserves to be said that that guy, anybody who stands up and talks and displays an ounce of humility or vulnerability in that moment, I give them a huge amount of credit. I think that's so hard to do.
Absolutely. Good for him. And before we move on to the other game, last thing I was going to mention, I think the one predictable thing that happened in this game was, like, Chris Jones singled up on some of these Bengals blockers. Was just a monstrous mismatch. And in the same way Jonathan Allen needs a nickname in order to sort of up his Q rating here, Chris Jones is on primetime a lot. We see the Chiefs a lot, so he's not quite as undercovered here, but man, he's easily top five defender in the NFL, and boy, did he play like it in this game.
Holy smokes. I mean, especially when he was lined up as an edge. He was just goes to show, like, you think you need speed off the edge and quickness, and it's not that Chris Jones isn't fast, but, like, if he's just running in right at the quarterback and he just topples the other guy over.
Just move someone out of the way and not be slowed down in any way.
Yeah, I mean, that's just as good. And, boy, now here's what you can do that against the Bengals. You won't be able to do that against the Eagles. And we'll talk a little bit about that, because I charted Lane versus Bosa in that game, and some of the stuff that they were doing I thought was really interesting, and some of the stuff that I think they will do to Chris Jones in the Super Bowl.
All right. Before we get to that, I do just want to mention, Chiefs were impressive in this game. And they won this game over a team that obviously had gotten the better of them the last three times. On a day when Patrick Mahomes is not 100%, they lose three wide receivers during the game, and they had that ridiculous Mahomes fumble turnover that they lost that I thought Sam Hubbard might scoop up and run for another touchdown, which would have been pretty funny. But there was, you know, we talked about some of the things that went in their favor. There was a lot going against them, too. Big picture and sort of individual play, and to pull this game out was quite impressive.
It was, even though the NFL is concocting a vast conspiracy to get the Andy Reid Bowl into primetime.
The Andy Reid Bowl. It's cookie dough mixed with crushed barbecue Pringles, and then just... just a little drizzle of bacon fat on top. You can get it at participating Wawa's.
That does sounds amazing. I was driving home from the Eagles game last night, and the Eagles feed you well at the press box. I was stuffed, but there were at least 31 Wawa billboards for the grilled cheese, the brisket grilled cheese, and. And I was just like, oh, my God, I'm going to pull over and get one. Like, I was like, if I see one more of these, I'm going to make one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made in my life, which is to pull over at a Wawa at 12:30 in the morning and eat a hot brisket grilled cheese. I didn't do it, but I almost did.
Oh, it man.
Was, yeah, it was.
Do you have any of those brisket sandwiches sitting in the back at 1 a.m.?
Oh, God.
I'll take it.
I did that once. I left Arrowhead. I was at like a Chiefs, one of the teams I was covering as a beat reporter back then, the Giants or the Jets played at Arrowhead. I think it was the Giants. It was a primetime game. And the only thing that was open was like a Sonic in Overland Park at like 2:15 in the morning. And boy, was that a suspect meal. That was, uh, That was not good. And I was like, oh, well, I'll be healthy. And I'll order like a turkey and hummus wrap. And I was just like, not thinking like, when's the last time anyone has used any of these ingredients at Sonic? And what am I about to put into my body? You know, it was a tough one.
You just got the display one they keep in the window.
Heat it up.
All right, so we go back to the early game here. That was the Eagles beating up on the remnants of the 49ers. I'm not even sure there's a ton of football to get into, but you have some insights on the Nick Bosa approach that the Eagles took, which is obviously going to be somewhat relevant with Chris Jones coming up.
Yeah, I charted Bosa versus Lane because I thought that's what I was going to write about initially, and wanted to see what the Eagles had done. And super interesting, just sort of the chess match that was going on between them, where Bosa was pushing Lane back and getting to Jalen Hurts a couple of times, but then it was weird. It was almost like they were succeeding, and then what the Eagles would do is they would shift to something. They would do zone read. They would conflict him. They would invite him upfield. They would trap him. And sometimes it wouldn't work, but everything seemed to be kind of based around this idea of, you know, putting him in a situation of extreme discomfort. And the 49ers, I thought, so they ran a couple of stunts where Nick Bosa would go hard inside, and then, you know, whatever tackle he was playing with would loop outside, so Lane would have to switch with the guard. Mm-hmm. And that worked every time, every single time. And the 49ers only did it like four times. And I wondered why they didn't go back to that. But a couple different things that they did, they kept kind of conflicting him. And that's what led to that Boston Scott, the read option touchdown, where Bosa got sucked into the pack and then got knocked over. And then Boston Scott just had a very easy run into the end zone. That was sort of the end game of a couple of the plays that they were running before to try to lure him into that false sense of comfort. But there was a couple of times too where the Eagles came out in that jumbo formation where they would move the other tackle over to Lane Johnson's right, and so there'd be two tackles and then like a tight end right behind them in sort of like an up back formation, and then they were just plowing them. And yeah. So I thought it was really cool, kind of an all hands on decky approach, almost analogous to what they did the week before with Jason Kelce and Dexter Lawrence, where the Eagles are just so good, and Jeff Stoutland, their offensive line coach, Shane Steichen, their offensive coordinator, pinpointing the one guy that's going to give them trouble, and then sort of ravel, you know, what's the opposite of unravel? How do you ravel? Is it ravel?
Sure, you just ravel. I don't know if that's correct, but yeah, let's just say you ravel.
They're going to ravel a game plan around it. Oh my God, is that a word? Are we just tired?
Probably not, but let's make it a word. Let's do it today.
I Googled ravel, and I'm getting Maurice Ravel. He's a French composer.
if anyone calls us on it, we'll be like, no, we knew it wasn't a word. We were talking about the French composer and his ability to put together a composition of music.
Nope. I don't know if you heard this. I'm hitting it on dictionary.com.
Mm-hmm.
Ravel. It's an intransitive verb.
I knew it.
Yeah. So we're good. You can raveling. Yeah. Synonyms would be to bind, fasten, tie, wind, knot, entangle.
There you go. Yeah. So right. Yeah, we used it correctly.
We got it.
Oh, man. Good show so far.
Can you tell we're running on a collective 6 hours of sleep?
Oh, man. So, I'm glad you brought up the Boston Scott one. I couldn't tell on the broadcast if Bosa jumped inside because he's expecting Dre Greenlaw to basically scrape and be responsible for contain on the outside, or it just looked like a lot of conflicted defenders. This, you gave the specific analysis. I'll give the broad, barely considered analysis. A lot of defenders just constantly in conflict in this game. And yes, you can go back to watching, you know, keeping an eye on the linebackers. Obviously, such a strength for this 49ers defense. This was one of Fred Warner's, most of his games are really impressive, so it's not really saying that much to say it was one of his worst games of the year, because it was still probably pretty good. Dre Greenlaw had a rough one, though, and I didn't know if it was a result of that. I also wondered how much of the fact that Boston Scott is 5'6" played into that touchdown run, because once he popped out, it took everyone like a full second to realize he had gotten, he had broken contain and gotten out on the edge. But it was, it's funny. It's like you obsess over Jalen Hurts and, you know, his mobility and his threat as a runner, and it constantly puts you in conflict. But it almost felt like the 49ers were almost like 55-45 more worried about Hurts running than the running backs running. And as good as Hurts is as a runner, like Miles Sanders with a head of steam is a much more dangerous runner at that point. And yeah, that's kind of how this one played out.
Well, because when you evolve the run pass option into the run pass run option, which the Eagles have done, and that's sort of their contribution to the football world this year, mm-hmm. I think that's what you're doing, right? Is you're just inviting another layer of fear and hesitation for all the defenders that you face. And I'm very, very happy that we get the long week between these games, because now we get a fully healthy Hurts. We get a, I don't know, you think Mahomes can maybe get back to like 80-85%?
Yeah,
after 2 weeks?
I think, and look, I think with Hurts' shoulder, I think both quarterbacks will probably be, you know, somewhere in the 80-90% health range.
Yes.
And that's fair. That's fair for everyone.
That's as good as we're going to get at this time of year.
The 49ers, man. There's not even a whole lot to say. They should. The league is very reactive, so I'm sure they'll bring back the emergency quarterback at this point, because it was kind of funny and a little bit of a curiosity when, you know, I don't know if you were hearing this in the press box, but they were kind of like, well, Christian McCaffrey is the emergency quarterback, so are we just going to see McCaffrey and Debo in the backfield and then they'll try to patch something together? That was fun to think about during like a commercial break. And then they started doing stuff and it was like, wow, this is awful. This is like the worst Pop Warner game, and it's so sad that it's these just, you know, overwhelmingly talented guys, and they don't have a functional offense anymore. It was like watching the Golden State Warriors, but they can only shoot out to like 4 feet, and it was just dumb, unwatchable football. And you could plug any sort of, as we saw over the course of the year, perhaps you know, baseline competent professional quarterback in there and probably gotten something out of this offense.
I think it's a big credit to D'Amico Ryans that this game was close for a long time. You know, this game was close for way longer than it should have, to the point where I always thought that they were just going to pop one of these runs and then all of a sudden it was going to be over, you know? And I don't know. I did not have any faith in the Eagles being able to punch the gas the way that they did. But, you know, I've obviously been wrong in the past and I was wrong there. But so there was this moment where right when Josh Johnson started getting evaluated for a concussion, he starts getting evaluated for a concussion. Brock Purdy is in the medical tent. I think around that time, Bosa is like limping off the field. And then it was almost like, it was cinematic, like this, the sun started setting like very rapidly and like the sky just turned like very like metallic gray. And I was like, oh my God, this is terrifying. If you were a player, like how do you not think that you're somewhat cursed a little bit? But it was weird. That was Haason Reddick hitting Brock Purdy. And that was a game changing moment at the time. we had no idea how serious it was because we're following Brock Purdy to the sidelines with the binoculars, and then he throws a little bit, and it looks like he can throw. So you think, okay, back to the game, and we'll check this out. And then all of a sudden, he's standing by himself with no medical personnel. He's completely alone, and nobody's even trying to get him back on the field. And at that moment, you're like, uh-oh, like this is, you know, they've identified some sort of a problem where it's beyond the point where they can get him back on the field. And he tried to throw like three or four times. And each time, like Josh Johnson is just rocking the ball and it's that NFL velocity. And Brock Purdy's just like, eh, like it's like the, you remember Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, we've talked about that terrible movie. Yeah.
It's a great movie. No, we talked about Little Big League.
And
well, we've talked about Rookie of the Year. Yeah. It's the end of the movie. It's the pitch that he throws at the end when he loses the strength in his arm, and then he flips open the lip of the glove, and it's the mom who was a good baseball player. And then she looks at him, and she's like, it was me. That whole thing happened with Brock Purdy, his mom, the whole thing on Sunday. But that was like the velocity that we were getting on his throws. And it was so sad that we had to put him back out there for that. And I don't know. So you're anti-emergency QB? You're anti-reactivity.
I'm just saying. So, look, a lot of teams carry two quarterbacks. You can sit here and say, like, well, 49ers should have carried a third quarterback. Yeah, okay, sure. Maybe the third quarterback was going to go out there and get concussed on his second snap, and then we're in the same right. spot. But there were a handful of games. Like, you think back to, like, the Dolphins when they played the Jets after the Tua Tagovailoa Thursday night concussion, and Teddy Bridgewater gets concussed on, or I should say, that they take him out of the game to check him for a concussion, if we're being medically accurate, on the first snap, and then Skylar Thompson's out there, and you're just kind of thinking like, huh, Skylar Thompson, kind of a runaround quarterback, what happens if he gets hurt? Then what? And this is what. It's so, it was worth addressing a while ago, and again, I don't know why they limit to 46 on game day and all that stuff. But, I think the emergency quarterback is probably coming back in light of this game here.
Yeah. And it would just have this whole fascinating sub world, right? I mean, I used to love asking about, that was one of my favorite things each year when you come into a new year covering a team, when I did the Jets and then the Giants. I loved asking about the emergency quarterback. Now, with Rex Ryan's Jets, they always carried like 9 quarterbacks, which made it ridiculous. And there was always like Kevin O'Connell was their third quarterback for a very long time, and was like active a lot of times, if I remember correctly. It's Mark Sanchez, Mark Brunel, and then Kevin O'Connell. But the Giants, it was always like, oh, who's the emergency QB behind Ryan Nassib? And no one would want to tell you. And that was like, they're just like, oh no, you don't need to know that. And it's like, well, okay. But always trying to find out who the emergency QB was a fun thing.
Nice. Yeah, there's a look, the rule that won't come out of this that I, and only I, am advocating for is you should just be able to concede downs at this one. Like, there should be a way that Nick Sirianni and Kyle Shanahan, with 6 minutes left in this game, can be like, you know what? Why are we doing this? Why are we, Landon Dickerson gets hurt on a run in a 30-point game where the 49ers have zero chance of even scoring. I mean, what's the absolute maximum number? Maybe they can score 10 points in 6 minutes, and there's only like a 1,000-to-1 chance of that happening. Like, the game is mathematically decided, and there just has to be a way to get everyone off the field. And I don't think anyone would have complained to sort of get out of there and not have to watch the final 5 minutes of that game. The other thing to get to here, and thankfully it ended up, well, not thankfully because of the reason it unfolded this way with all the injuries, but it didn't end up having a huge impact, but the Devontae Smith fourth down non-catch catch. And I will continue to insist on this. People will get on Kyle Shanahan for not challenging it. it is not the coach's job to also officiate the game. The entire challenge system is just the stupidest thing in every sport. It's the officials' responsibility, and they are assisted by more officials who have the ability to view these things with even more angles than we see. So we as viewers at home, and I'm sure you guys in the press box, and also the 49ers coaches, did not see that replay that they showed later that showed the ball was indeed incomplete. However, at Park Avenue, they do have immediate access to that replay. And did someone miss it? You could say, if you are conspiracy-minded, perhaps they were like, well, the replay didn't show on TV anyway, so there's nothing to fix. Like, we're only doing this for the sake of presentation to the audience, but you knew it was going to come out at some point anyway, that, you know, the angle that showed that ball was dropped. It's just ridiculous. It can't have, and that is one of those rules that Park Avenue can weigh in and do the expedited replay and overturn that. Catch or non-catch is something they can do, and I don't know why they didn't.
We're gonna dovetail very quickly off the rails here. But I was just thinking about like solutions that would make for just completely wild endings for NFL football games. If you were out of quarterbacks, like maybe you could have an option where the Eagles didn't have the frisbee catching dogs this week, but like. Yeah. But like you could bring a frisbee catching dog, and what you would have to do is like in lieu of like a first down, like if it was like 3rd and 10, instead your coach would have to stand at the goal line and complete a 100-yard pass to a frisbee dog or something like that. Like that could be your vehicle to move the ball. Like there's like at some point in the post world, post society, the NFL will break down into just a complete carnival of ridiculousness, and I'm here for that, you know.
I'm here for the frisbee dogs. Jerry Rice dog football video game was ahead of its time. That's what we'll be saying in 30 years.
I agree.
The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.